Get ready to deep dive into the world of digital transformation, where we explore the latest trends, innovations, and challenges shaking up industries. Join us as we decode the secrets behind successful digital strategies and hear from experts who are at the forefront of disrupting the status quo. In each episode, we'll unravel the mysteries of the digital realm and uncover the hidden opportunities that lie within. From artificial intelligence to blockchain, from automation to cybersecurity, we'll leave no digital stone unturned. But hold on tight, because this podcast isn't your average tech talk. We're injecting a hefty dose of wit and humor into every episode, making learning about digital transformation an absolute blast. So if you're ready to embrace the digital revolution with a smile on your face, tune in to the Digital Disruption Podcast and get ready to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Don't miss out on the fun. Subscribe now and join us on this wild digital journey.
Hello, hello, and good morning, everyone, or good evening, or, good times, good times. Welcome on board, Patrick.
Thanks, Dawood. Nice to see you, and great to be on the Digital Disruption podcast.
Yeah, nice to see you, and, when wrapping up 2023, has been an interesting year, full of ups and downs, weird and full of risks, issues, death, Google sorry, GA4 stuff like that. So in 2024 in the wrapping of 2023, and in preparation for 2024, we wanted to give you and I'm talking to the audience, we wanted to give you guys a wrap up of what things that you should be focusing on in your preparations to going to 2024 to start out not just strong, but strong, consistent, on track, and, ready for whatever challenge, obstacle, crisis that that is gonna be thrown your way, with updates happening on a weekly and daily basis, to be honest, at this time. So we're definitely gonna be going through some of the, from our perspective, from the analytics digital transformation perspective, some of the things that you should definitely look out for when going into 2024. So how about we start with everyone's favorite, migration. And by migration, I mean GA4 migration. Want to take it out from here, Patrick?
Sure. Thanks for teeing that up, Dawood. So if you have not migrated to GA4, I would say you're a little bit behind the curve at this point if you're a Google Analytics user. Now, you may be a GA360, so an enterprise paid license holder, in which case you did get a bit of a reprieve. You will have access to Universal Analytics until July of next year. If you're a GA standard user, your Universal Analytics properties stopped collecting data several months ago. And so hopefully, if you are a GA360 license holder, you are in the process of standing up a GA4 property at this point, if you have not done so already. If you did sort of configure a Google Analytics 4 property with basic tracking, but have not done any of the customization work to really, make it match, any of the custom dimensions, custom metrics, additional kind of metadata, custom channel definitions. If you haven't done all of that configuration work, as well as measurement work that you may have done, several years ago for your Universal Analytics measurement, you really should prioritize getting that in order to either close out the year or certainly as a Q1 priority, I would say. There's a lot of, marketer specific features in Google Analytics 4 that in the past were GA360 only features. that are now available to standard account users. So if you have let your Universal Analytics standard account lapse and did not stand up a GA4 account, or if you just, you know, you haven't really invested in bringing it up to speed, you may want to consider that. I'll give you a quick rundown. Within Google Analytics 4, the integrations that are available to you, even as a standard account holder, would be Google Ads, which you've had in the past, but now also Display and Video 360. If you invest in that DSP, either through your agency or if you have a license yourself, Campaign Manager 360, so Enterprise Ad Server. Again, you may be utilizing this through your agency, or you may have a license directly, but that can be integrated with Google Analytics 4, Search Ads 360, both Salesforce Marketing Cloud and Salesforce Sales Cloud is anticipated shortly, but Salesforce Marketing Cloud went live last month. So you can actually use Google Analytics 4 behavioral audience segments within Marketing Cloud to fuel your email and SMS message audience lists, for example, in Journey Builder. So there's a number of integrations available to you. Also the native extract to BigQuery. So essentially bringing your unprocessed analytics data into BigQuery for cloud-based analysis, data visualization, et cetera. That's now a standard and a free feature. So there's a lot of great functionality in there. The audience features within GA4, it's essentially live audience sharing. So once you have GA4 connected to Google Ads, DV360, or Search Ads 360, when you create audiences within GA4, they are automatically available to target or suppress in the platforms that you have linked and where you have the advertising features configured. So this is a great upgrade from Universal Analytics, where you have to create the audience and publish it to one destination at a time. That's no longer necessary. It's a big, big upgrade. If you couple that with the ability, much easier ability to use first-party identifiers within GA4, you can more easily import first-party data, model data, propensity scores, anything like that to build audiences from, and having the ability then, you know, directly utilize those audiences is a powerful feature. So just, you know, keep in mind that, you know, and if you are a GA360 license holder and you've kind of been avoiding that project, hopefully this is a bit of a wake up call to, you know, if you haven't already, you do need to prioritize migrating to GA4 ahead of the July sunset. Along similar lines, you know, I would expect as the year's coming to a close and as 2024 launches, that teams should really be operationalizing GA4, so bringing it into your ways of working. Some things are going to be sort of required. So if you've been using Universal Analytics conversion goals within, say, Google Ads or for custom bidding scripts in DV360, you really need to migrate to using GA4 flagged conversions instead. We can certainly help you with that. There's documentation available, but you do need to make that switch. You know, we definitely strongly recommend utilizing GA4 conversion goals across Google Ad Tech. It can be really useful. Again, like I said, like say for in DV360, for doing custom bidding scripts, value-based bidding, you can actually link GA4 to your Campaign Manager 360 now. So you can actually use GA4 conversion goals as floodlight activities. So there's a lot of enhanced capabilities from GA4 over Universal Analytics there. Again, the audience sharing, that's a big deal. So those are the things. I mean, and then of course there's the training component. One of the biggest complaints we hear is that teams don't quite understand how to generate the same reports in GA4 as they did in Universe Analytics, where to find data, how does attribution work, how can I create audience segments, right? Some of the things that people were very familiar with in Universe Analytics, they haven't utilized the new platform enough to be as familiar with GA4. And so there's still a lot of misunderstanding and misconceptions of which reports tell what kinds of stories and where to go for key information and how to retrieve it. So training, upskilling your teams on GA4 and how to get the most out of it is also a big component. It's certainly something we'd love to help clients with. There's tons of training material out there. Google Skill Shop has a GA certification training that is freely available as well, and it is geared around GA4 at this point. So there's a lot of good resources out there for upskilling on GA4.
And I guess one of the things that everyone should be just looking out for is Google Analytics will be our Google will be killing Google signals from the GA4 reporting. So be on the lookout for this.
Yes, it will stop. They'll no longer use GA4 signals as a reporting identity. So it could have an impact on how users are reported and things like that. Signals will still be used for some of the like remarketing and audience features, but that will all be kind of behind the scenes. So yeah, it will impact how users are counted and identified for sure. Yep. Another thing people should not forget about is whether you have a GA360 license or a Universal Analytics account. So even if you have made the transition to GA4 at this point, and you just have an archive of your historical Universal Analytics data within the GA interface, you are going to lose access to that data in July. So those properties have stopped collecting data. You still have access to the historical data. Well, you're also going to lose access to that historical data in 2024. It's really important, if that data is important to you, which it is to many organizations, to do a proper data backup in a way that will help you avoid sampling. So one of the things, if you just try to straight export data for very long time periods, or any of your, especially where you're doing custom reporting that might have a high level of granularity and cardinality, you're going to run into sampling as well as aggregation to, kind of other groupings for high cardinality dimensions. So there are some best practices to export that data in ways that can avoid sampling and can give you a real, proper archive of your historical data. We're happy to help folks with that. It's something we're helping several of our clients with at the moment. And we expect, if you wait till 4 weeks before deprecation, I suspect we'll be real busy on that, and other vendors will as well. So, the platform is no longer collecting data. So there's no time like now to start backing that data up. You can back it up into the cloud platform of your choice. It's easy to send it into BigQuery. You can also be sending it to AWS. There's lots of options. It could just be in CSV local files as well, though that's not necessarily the best option from a data governance standpoint, but there's lots of options available. Don't let your data just disappear.
It's not disappearing. Google is killing third-party cookies. So people, get your first-party strategies in point. And I'll leave that to Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard the third-party cookie deprecation story for a while now, and we've been trying to get people prepared for it. There's a number of best practices that go into preparing for the post-cookie world or post-third-party cookie world. First-party data strategies, as a large umbrella being one of them, right? That What does that mean? It means, well, have you established the appropriate level of trust, credibility, and value exchange with your prospects and customers that they're willing to consent to give you first party data that you can use for measurement and for targeting it at customer engagement, et cetera, right? So are they willing to have you reach out to them via mobile, via their phone number, via email, via push notification, via web, whether that's an app push, desktop push, et cetera, right? Some customer engagement platforms even have the ability to push notifications out to IoT at this point. So, various kinds of connected devices that people have in their homes or wearables, all of these different kinds of things, right? One of the things that I see some enterprises doing that I think should be a general best practice is convincing consumers to give you first party data before they convert, right? Is there something valuable that you can give them before they decide to do business with you, whether that's in a B2C or a B2B context, where if you can collect an email address, possibly a phone number, can you give, there's, of course, in the B2B context, there's a lot of gated content, white papers, downloadable content that people exchange contact information for. It's very easy to give bunk information for those things. If people really want to download, but they don't want to give you their contact information, they'll find a way. It's not, so I think it's really important to try to establish an actual relationship of trust and credibility so that people understand you really do want to interact and provide something to them in exchange for that information. You are going to be a good custodian of that information to make sure that you keep it secure. You only communicate them with them in the ways that they've consented to, et cetera, right? So, but if you can get that information early in the process, you'll see many e-commerce sites, right? One of the first things you'll see, if you've never visited the site or transacted, right, you're going to get a modal pop-up that's, you're going to get somewhere between 10 and 20% off your first order, right? By giving them your email address or your phone number, whether you've, right, you haven't even decided you're going to buy yet. You're getting that message, right? The hope is you give that information, and then, maybe on this visit you're going to buy, maybe you're not, but as soon as you're ready, you're going to get that, spiff on your first order. Again, it's gameable. You can always use multiple email addresses, things like that. But for the most part, it is a very useful strategy to get people into your engagement channels earlier, right? So if you can, find ways to do that, that's a key part of first party data strategy, because known users are much easier to target through addressable media channels, all of these things, right? Versus anonymous users, especially in that post cookie world, right? So try and get people into your first party. And really, a lot of people are, I think it was Forrester maybe 2-3 years ago coined this term zero party data. Not to take anything away from their research, they do great research, but we always have to make up new jargon, right? First party data wasn't good enough, so now we had to have zero party data. The distinction there being, first party data is any data you collect directly and own. So it can include anonymous data. It can include, aggregate behavioral data, right? It can include, Google Analytics data, for example, right? Is first party data, right? But, zero party data is data that user has given you directly, right? Consent and, provided through, a contact form, through a transaction process, right? It's data you've literally have in hand for that user that they've chosen to give you. And in that sense, it certainly is a more valuable gold mine of data, undoubtedly. But I don't get too hung up on whether we label that as zero party or first party data, but it should be part of your data strategy for customers and prospects. And of course, finding channels, tools, methods that will allow you to use that data to run addressable media. So you know where you are quite literally, you know you're sending a message on a channel to a given set of users, right? That's important. And then being able to measure the impact of that media on those users that you know, right? That's a big, it's already valuable. People are already doing it, of course. It's only going to become more valuable, right? And people are finding the proliferation of private marketplaces, addressable marketplaces, retail media networks, right? Even just the ability to leverage retail data, even if you're not buying on that particular retail media network, seller-defined audiences, right? So this is where publishers are using their own first-party data, curating those audiences. I think the jury's still out on this one in terms of how those seller-defined audiences will be kind of certified or have some sort of quality and assurances that when you say you're buying this audience, you are in fact buying that audience. I think the retail media networks have done a good job in terms of like advertisers are seeing good value from buying based on retail data and buying on retail media networks themselves. So that there's a reason that that's such a growing area of paid media. But yeah, so those things, I mean, in the Google ecosystem context, you know, continuing to leverage functionality like Google Customer Match, so being able to directly load your first party data into media platforms, right? That's a big big deal. Will become likely more important. Again, you know, really important kind of best practices around that. Pre-segmenting the data, right? Don't just send. I mean, you can send just a big blob list if you want to, but you're going to get much better results if you actually do some data-driven segmentation of those first-party lists and, you know, break them up into meaningful chunks based on behavior, intent, et cetera, right? So customer match, if you're not using it, you should be using it. You should be using it in, you know, Google products where that's the, you know, that's the specific name for it. So you should be using Google Ads. You should be using it in platforms like DV360. If you're buying on other DSPs, they also have the ability to load first party data. It's just not called customer match. But if you're buying on Trade Desk, if you're using StackAdapt, whatever, you know, if you're using Viant, whatever platform you're using, you should be loading your first party data or syncing, integrating your first party data. Absolutely. In terms of, again, within the Google context, Google has been promoting the enhanced conversions functionality for a while now. With the increased data signal loss, cookieless world, certainly on the mobile app side of things, like the challenges of mobile app measurement, especially iOS, having additional layers of measurement capabilities or ability to capture conversions that are not directly observable, like in a deterministic way via tags and cookies. So enhanced conversions allows you to push first party data into platform, into Google Ads, into search ads in order to, it's hashed. So it's privacy friendly, no unencrypted data makes it into the platform, but it's yet another way to tie conversion data to media exposure is what enhanced conversions allows. And it's using first party data in a privacy friendly way. So I would tell, you know, if you're not using enhanced conversions, you should be. It's really important. Outside of the Google ecosystem, any of this kind of server to server type measurement functionalities, Facebook, Kapi, all the various other paid social platforms have some version of a conversion API. I'm a big opponent of acronyms because they obscure things, and I just used an acronym, so I apologize. But so Kapi, for anybody who keeps hearing Kapi but doesn't know what it is conversion API. So it's the ability to send that again, using oftentimes a first-party user identifier, right, along with the conversion data, sending it directly to, in the case of Facebook, happy directly into Facebook, right, and then allowing Facebook to join that conversion data to that user information. We all know, or I should actually, let me backtrack. If we don't all know, we should all know, in Google Analytics 4, there is no impression data for media. So it's all based on click-through, with one exception, which is YouTube engaged view data. You do have some attribution to YouTube engaged view data. So what that means is while we're gaining some visibility into the holistic user journey in a post-click sense, we are losing some visibility to top of funnel impression and view-based media performance within GA4. That means we need to have supplemental methods and tools in place to assess top of funnel media, right? So you are going to want to continue to use your enterprise, ad serving and media measurement tools, whether that's Campaign Manager 360 or a Flash Talking or something like that, right? You are going to also, if you're not currently doing it, layer in some, form of statistical, like media mix modeling, marketing mix modeling, where you're doing more aggregate statistical analysis. There's a lot of great, packages for Python and R, and a lot of this can be run off of virtual machines or other cloud-based, computing methods, right? But you can do, it's still important to involve data scientists and who can really properly run and generate insights out of these models, but it's nowhere near as difficult or complicated to do these things as it was 10 years ago. You can, you either, if you have an in-house data science team, or if you could, engage a freelancer if need be. But the infrastructure to do this kind of modeling is readily available. And there are a lot of really great, like, pre-built models that you can use, like Rodin or other Google has been recently featuring this lightweight MMM tool. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You do need some clean data, kind of weekly granularity, essentially, like revenue, qualified leads. Well, depending on if you're B2B or B2C, but you basically need weekly granularity, ideally, revenue dollar amounts plus media spend. You can also incorporate certain organic metrics, but you need them all consistent for a same, hopefully 2 years worth of data if you have it, weekly granularity. And you can run those models, pretty easily, and then fine tune them and et cetera, right? And then you can run, like, allocation outputs to essentially try and maximize response, right? Maximize your ROAS. You can maximize revenue for a given budget, or you could say, if we use the same budget for the last 12 weeks, how should we reallocate it for maximum effect? There's a whole bunch of different outputs you can do once you have this model generated from your own data that can be really useful, especially again at assessing that kind of top of funnel impact. On the mobile app side of things, again, iOS is probably the big challenge. Having in place some form of SKAdNetwork or SKAd network compatible solution, right, which will allow you to continue to receive kind of not individual level tracking of your campaigns, but will give you, partial insights, right? Partial signals into how campaigns are generating, app installs, post-install actions. So we'll give you insights for your campaigns without giving you that user level kind of granularity that is also generating, like, privacy concerns, et cetera, right? So there are MMPs, mobule measurement partner solutions, like an AppsFlyer, others that directly incorporate SCAD network, measurement capabilities. Google Ads is compatible with SCAD network tracking for app. So just, it's not something you have to, again, you don't have to develop these capabilities in-house, directly in some like hand-rolled fashion, but you should be exploring the available solutions in the marketplace that will help continue to provide visibility into mobile performance. Consent mode. So Google Consent mode. So this is the ability for tags for Google products to respond to consent signals from your consent management platform and then to behave differently based on the level of consent granted. This is really important to get in place. In some markets, some regions, it's going to be required on all Google product tags, such as in the EU, but in it's a generally a good practice, since consent is a, an emerging global standard in the sense of like 130 plus countries with, data privacy regulations of one kind or another, various forms of consent requirements. The great thing about consent mode is that, in the case of full consent, then the tags operate, at full capacity, capture all data that they can. And then there are scenarios where lesser consent is granted or certain jurisdictional considerations are in place. And then you can at least send partial signals to Google, right? That a ping that a GCL ID or DCL ID was present, right? But not the full data, right? But at least then Google has a signal that there was media exposure. And then of course when all tracking and data storage is blocked, then the tag doesn't send anything, right? So there's a whole bunch of benefits of having that sort of degradable tracking in place, both from a ensuring you do capture as much data as possible and doing it in a compliant fashion. So you're mitigating your risk footprint and you're making your data collection as robust as possible. The way you tag your websites is increasingly important. From a standpoint of the Google ecosystem, you really should be following one of two site tagging protocols at this point. You should be have Google Tag Manager in place site-wide and with Conversion Linker, and should be trying to, and that will ensure that cookies are set in a first-party context. An additional layer, I guess, of robustness would be server-side tagging. So, you having your GTM code pointed to your tagging server in the cloud, having a GTM server-side container as well as a web and app client, and then a container, and then sending that data to the cloud server, and then onward to the endpoints. That way, also things like Google Client ID, other identifiers can actually be set in the server request header, making them even more robust. So there's a number of things that can be done to ensure as much of a first-party context for your tracking in the Google ecosystem. Other ecosystems also support these kind of methodologies, so you want to just, be aware of that. Yeah, I would say those are the big priorities. I don't know how we're doing for time, but have a conversation with your internal teams. Have a conversation with Daoud and I, have a conversation with us. We would love to help you with any of these initiatives, but If you have competent partners and vendors that you're working with currently, they can also help you with this. We're not trying to drum up business, but we would love to have a conversation with you if you need help.
That sounds good. I think this will be a big, big bang and a big, big grab for 2023 and a big, well, introduction to 2024 where lots of changes are happening. So, well, I don't know. Thank you, Patrick, for sharing all of this. Hopefully people have found this helpful and it set them up for success for 2023, for 2024, I mean. And yeah, we're definitely looking to seeing people. If you have anything to ask, just shoot a message. LinkedIn, like our page, anything. You're like, well, if you find our email, we'll help you out, But yeah, I guess that's it on my end. Have anything else?
I think that's it. I think 2023 is a wrap.
Yeah, it looks like it. We'll see you in 2024. Maybe there will be an episode before the end of 2023, but we'll definitely see you soon. Bye
Sounds
bye.
good. Thanks, my friend.
Bye.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Digital Disruption Podcast. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the world of digital transformation and gained valuable insights to help navigate the ever-changing landscape. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us on our website, esens.com, or connect with us on social media. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting discussions on the forefront of digital innovation. Remember, the future is now, and it's time to embrace the power of transformation. Thanks for listening, and until next time.